we are the super nerdy Sailor Guardians who fight for love and justice. And this is Across the Mooniverse.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Across the Mooniverse. I'm always dancing.
Hi, everybody. And, I'm Mike.
And I'm Maddie. And welcome to Across the Mooniverse.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Moon Day.
Happy Moon Day. It has been quite the saga the last couple of weeks. We've both been very busy with just life. Yes.
But so I'm very happy to be here. We're able to stick to our commitment to do the show. For me, this is a priority, you know? I mean, life is life. Life is always going to be hectic and chaotic. But this, for me, this, doing this show is, it's very much part of my social skills now that as an adult who's trying to, you know, make friends as a 54-year-old man. It's not that easy to do, you know? I can't just find a D&D game.
Yeah. This, like, sticking to the schedule, even if we don't do the same time every week or whatnot, it has a very similar feel to all of my D&D games, where it's like, you know, we may not make it this time, but we're gonna do it. We're definitely gonna make it next time, or we're gonna reschedule or whatnot. But it's definitely gonna happen. That's something that. I've been adding in the show notes on the recent episodes, the cosmos can make us late, but it can't make us stop.
Yeah. And speaking of D&D, you know I worked with Vin Diesel, right?
What?
Yeah. And did you know that he has his D&D character, is the name tattooed? He has a tattoo of his D&D character's name. He's had that same character since he was like 14.
I believe it.
Isn't that cool?
That is really cool.
Yeah, I worked on XXX. I worked on the first XXX. It was the last movie I worked on.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
He was a pretty cool guy. I just did the whole Riddick series last week.
Oh, yeah. I like the, honestly, I know most people don't care for it as much, but I honestly like the second one the best.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I like the first one.
Yeah. The third one I felt was very much just the first one.
It was caffeine, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about our show. This is season one, episode 17. Usagi the Model, the Flask of the Monster Camera. And we do find out what the monster camera is.
Indeed we do. Kind of terrifying, honestly.
So I wanted to say, I have some old business from the previous episode. The reason I was talking about Prince to begin with, so this is how it happened. These are how these digressions happen, where I end up waxing nostalgic. So I'm jealous of your trip to Japan and your knowledge of Japanese culture, especially as I get into anime more. And I mean, these posts is a completely different culture. They have different norms. And then, going through the wikis of some of my favorite animes and seeing, like, all the tropes, you know what I mean? That's very interesting to me. So I know you can be an Anglophile. What would be someone who's in love with Japanese culture? Japanophile?
Yeah. I was trying to think. I was like, did they use the Japanese word for Japan? But I don't know. So I would say, Japanophile.
First house, and I bought it with my girlfriend, which is, you know, a little unusual. Normally, people are married.
It's good to see here.
There we go. So maybe it's a cabin. So that was the reason I was talking about Prince, was that he used to spend Warner Brothers money really well. And so that's why I was telling the story about him and Warner Brothers. Yeah.
Yeah.
So thanks, Prince, for helping me get a new house. Yeah. All right. Back to the episode. I'll try not to digress as much as this episode, but who knows?
the impossible.
So it opens with Usagi gleefully exclaiming lunch.
Yes.
And I got really specific on you. I noticed, so she's sitting down to eat her lunch, and it looks like a bento box, and then she has personalized chopsticks. Now, I learned, because I started researching, and then it looks like a juice box, but I was like, do Japanese school children drink milk? And so I went on this whole thing. There is a campaign for Japanese school children to drink milk. And I learned that recently, like 2019, they switched over from it being milk in little boxes that have straws to they weren't sure if school children could handle the milk that American school children have been drinking their whole lives, which they call it a gable or a roof style box. In Japan, they thought the kids would spill those. So that's why they always have. But they got rid of the straws for sustainability. So Japanese school children now drink milk out of cartons like we did when we were growing up. Ta-da.
Well,
so I was wondering, in your opinion, so did you get the school lunch that she's eating, or did her mom make that?
Mom makes it, because it's established in the first couple of episodes that her mom makes her lunch, and she's very frequently forgetting it when she leaves for school in the morning.
So it is a bento box that her mom makes. That's a little unusual, isn't it? That's a higher level of care.
It's actually pretty common for...
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, for Japanese kids or anything like that to have the personally made bento boxes. Bento boxes are like a very... and they're like cutesy. Like they'll have like, you know, hot dogs that are little octopi and things like that. Like, they like to do that with their food and dress it up and make it look
cute. Right. So what I learned from other animes that I've enjoyed is that, like, in a couple of them, some of those I enjoyed, the trope seemed to be that it's a single young male, you know, high school male, who suddenly has beautiful women who live with him. And that's not unusual to the parents. In one case, it's because in Jiru with Love, which is one of my favorite animes, it's Princess Lala from the Devil's family. She's an alien. She's an alien princess. And she's come to Earth to escape her tyrannical father's overbearing nature. And so she moves in with this kid. They're said to get married. So he's marrying an alien princess. And an assassin comes, summons another shooter for Princess Devilu, for Lala is her name, he hires an assassin to kill off this poor school kid. And the assassin's name is Darkness. She's an engineered human who's an assassin. And her hair is actually a weapon. It's pretty cool. Anyway,
the hair weapon trope in anime. It cracks me up every time.
Yeah, it's great. Usagi could have, Sailor Moon could have a hair weapon for sure.
Oh, for sure.
With that hair of hers. Anyway, so in that anime, I don't know, because later on, Lala's sister Momo and another sister can come and live with them too. And Momo speaks to you as bed every morning. They're all competing for his affection. And one of the princess girls makes bento for him. Usagi had a bento box from that.
Yeah. because, you know, bento, when you're doing it, like, all complicated and whatnot, or just making it, it does take time to prepare. So it's, you know, it can be definitely a sign of, hey, I care for you enough to make you tiny hot dog octopi.
Yeah, it's not unique to Japan. You see that in American movies where the girlfriend or the wife, you know, goes out of her way to make a nice lunch for her fella, you know, as a soul. So I didn't realize, I didn't pick up earlier that Usagi's mom made her lunch. So, so Usagi's excited because it's lunchtime.
As per usual.
Oh, the other thing I want to talk about, so what do you think that drink box was? Was it juice? Was it some unique Japanese drinks, because I was reading that in Japan, I noticed they have vending machines everywhere. Is that true?
Yes.
Now, the reason they can get away with that is that there's more respect for vending machines. They don't get vandalized like they do here.
Yeah. No, yeah. There's vending machines everywhere in Japan, and like just going around in, for instance, in Tokyo, which is the second smallest prefecture, but it's also like the most highly populated. Like walking around Tokyo, even in the like middle of the busiest part of the day, during a holiday weekend, because we were there during Obon, which we covered a little bit, I think, in the last episode. It's just a festival about remembering the past, and among other things. So that's kind of a simplified show honor to your ancestors. Yeah, but it was super busy, but there was like no trash on the ground. That like trash cans are well maintained, vending machines are well maintained. Even when we were in smaller places, like in the back roads and neighborhoods and whatnot, it was like every time we found a vending machine or something like that, it was very nice. Like there's a big respect for the world around you, it feels like, there.
Yeah. Did you know that there's no trash cans in London?
Wild. None at all?
You know why?
Why?
No. Very few. Because that's where the bombs would get placed when the Irish Republican Army was fighting for independence. You remember that, right? That was a big conflict that basically, you know, Bono from U2 helped end. Was the IRA and the struggle in Northern Ireland, and so they would put bombs in the public trash cans in London. The terrorists would. Irish terrorists. So they got rid of the trash cans.
I mean, fair enough.
So I guess terrorism isn't a concern in Japan.
I mean, it is and it isn't. There's a lot of, as safe and secure as you feel when you're in Japan, it's part of the reason is when you're going there and you're a tourist, you're only going to these like well-established places. But it's got its own series of problems underneath the surface that Japan's just very good at PR.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Japan's been involved in international warfare for quite a while.
Yes.
They definitely have some enemies.
For sure.
At any rate, so it's lunchtime at school, and we see the girls. A group of girls looking at a magazine. That's Naru, isn't it? Who is looking at this magazine, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And one of the girls exclaims, "Amazing!" And then these pictures are amazing. And Naru says, "What's amazing is the person who took these photos is in middle school." And one of
the prestigious Japan photo contest.
And then Naru reads that his name is Kijin Shinakawa, a young prodigy. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, Yusaki decides to make this conversation her business. She walks over and grabs a magazine, and she's like, "Oh, hey!" And he goes to Gohagi Boys Middle School, which
is right just next to. It just so happens
it's right next to Ray's Girls School.
And, I don't know if this is ever said out loud in the anime, but it's definitely covered in the manga. That Ray's school, TA Girls Academy, is a Catholic school. And even though she is a Shinto priestess.
They name it TA for tits and ass? Because that's how I remembered it.
You know, I don't know.
Probably not.
No, it is based on, I happen to have the information for that school pulled up. The school is based on Toyo Iwa Yogakuin, which is a private Catholic school that's also located in the Minato Ward of Tokyo. Sailor Moon, they changed Toyo Iwa to TA, and the architecture and many other aspects matched the real school.
I didn't realize it was based on a real school. Interesting. It's interesting.
A lot of the stuff in things like that in the anime are based off of real things, because Naoko took a lot of inspiration from the neighborhood where she grew up. Because she grew up in Juban.
So that was what I was going to ask. was she from Vermont? Okay, that's why.
Yep.
That's why. Yeah, that makes sense. Write what you know. That's what they say.
Exactly.
You know, it makes it feel so real.
Oh, for sure. So, I mean,
so now,
it's like we were saying the other week,
Naomi has decided to grab the magazine the girls were looking at. She takes the magazine over to Ami and interrupts.
Yes.
Ami's doing math. Ami's doing complicated math. And Usagi comes over with this magazine and she's like, did you read this about this boy who goes to school right next to Ray's school? And Ami's Ami says, of course. It's like,
yeah,
I
knew that. Of course.
Right. It didn't make sense to me, but it's like, well, Ami reads. She's a big reader. So who knows the magazine that was printed in? So it didn't make sense to me that Ami would know that. Because I see Ami like taking time out to look at landscape photos. You know what I mean? She's pretty busy.
But she does have an appreciation for the arts and things like that. Like she has, well, she does love to study, and you know, studying is her precious youth. She has a lot of like she's got a lot of things that she studies. She's well rounded in her knowledge. Right.
Well, and then having her being an android, then would have made more sense that she would be super knowledgeable in all these areas. She's just super smart.
Yep.
Yeah. And so Usagi decides that she wants to meet this boy. She wants this famous person in their midst. And she kind of gives this little speech about we're only young once and we should have some fun. And it's just funny because Usagi's always having fun.
Yeah.
And then Ami the wet blanket is like, I am having fun. Studying is fun for me.
I'm not wasting anything. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
you're talking about precious youth.
Yeah, and Usagi just goes, "Oh, you're hopeless."
And the reason why Usagi wants to get the autograph is just because he's famous.
He's famous, right? He's a famous dude. At this point, it's because he's famous. Now, later in the episode, it turns out that he changes his subject matter. And Usagi becomes really interested in him. But we'll get there.
Yes.
So then we cut to a tilt-down reveal of a small group of reporters interviewing a boy whose hair looks like a badger belt.
Kind of, some of the hairstyles in this show
you know what I'm talking about? It's not like it's not really a skunk, it's more of a badger.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. Oh my god. I never thought of it that way, but the more I think about it, I'm like, no, that's totally what it is. His hair reminds me of the kids in Thundercats. Like there was the two kids and the boy. Yeah. Yeah. How does that vibe?
Yeah, I get that. I didn't really watch Thundercats when I'd seen it.
I didn't really watch it. It's silly. I like it and it's good, but it's also silly. It's like a very I don't know if you ever watched He-Man, but it's very like He-Man vibes. It's we gotta stop Mumbra and da da da. Yeah, but it's good. It's like a campy good, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, when I grew up, I remember when I got have you appeared to watch Akira? I told you that about that I was into Japanese animation before you guys were born. And so when I was growing up, there was no anime. There was no imported except for the stuff that was made for the American market. Which was like Speed Racer, Voltron, Star Blazers, those early shows that were those were made for the American market. And Speed Racer, of course, the animation is so poor, it's ridiculous.
But it's like good but bad. It's like a bad.
Well, you know what causes that, right? It's the frame rate. It's the number of frames that shot of each. Drawn itself. Yeah, there's 24 frames in a second of film because it was all shot on film. And most American animation, they drew every other second, or they drew every other frame. So each second, somebody had to draw and paint 12 different images for 1 second.
Yeah.
In Japan, it was like they did out of the 24, they did like 5 or 6. So that's why it's so dumb. Now with computers, it's a moot point. You know, it's
true.
Yeah. But The Simpsons changed. The Simpsons, when it first came out, the American animators drew the important stuff, the transitions, and then they sent the rest of it to China, and then China filled in the gaps of what they made. It would have been hard, I think, to do that at first, to communicate, what you needed to do to fill in the gaps. But they got it figured out. And then, of course, slowly, you can see the difference when the Simpsons changed. Computer animation, with traditional cellular animation, sometimes the cells would separate a little bit and you get shadowing. Mm-hmm. You ever notice that in old animation? You get shadowing.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. Anyway.
I would, if somebody walked up to me and said, hey, I have this 3-hour documentary about animation. Do you want to sit down right now and watch it? I would say, yes, thank you. I would like to. Yes, yes.
Yeah, it is kind of fascinating, isn't it?
It really is.
I have some personal experience with it. I did clay animation.
That's so cool. I love, stop motion is some of my favorite kind of animation because it's just the dedication it takes to do stop motion.
I did some of that when I was a kid.
That's so cool.
Yeah, when I was 13, mm-hmm. I went out and I drummed up business that summer. Mowing lawns, and I saved all my lawn mowing money. And at the end of the summer, I bought a Super 8 camera, and I bought a projector. A little reel to reel editor, so I could make my own home movies. The thing is when you're that age, it's hard to get your friends to take you seriously to make movies with them. They want to goof off. They don't.
As somebody who did the same. Yes.
And so that was what appealed to me about animation, was I had control. I didn't have to deal with that. Yeah. It's funny, I told everybody I wanted to be a director, and I thought I did until I actually worked on a movie set, and I saw what directors had to do. And directing actors, I was like, I don't want to be a director. I don't want to tell these actors what to do, you know?
Yeah.
Because I could see directors struggling. Like, if the actors weren't doing a good job, it's hard to get a good performance out of somebody who's not talented. You know what I mean?
Truth. Yeah,
I definitely worked with some actors who weren't talented. I'll say that. But it was more interesting to me working with the ones who were. There's a lot more going on than people realize when an actor's happy. You have to hit your marks without it looking like you're hitting your marks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize this with film cameras, especially. The focal length is very tight, and there's a person whose job it is to adjust the focus. So when an actor moves, that person has to calculate how many feet away from the camera they are. And sloppy actors, we'd have to redo takes because it'd be out of focus.
Yeah.
And that was heartbreaking because sometimes that would be, they'd have a great performance and they'd be like, no, we have to go again because they didn't hit their marks. You know?
Yeah.
You don't have that problem in animation. Animation's always in focus. All right.
You talk about having your own editing system and all of that stuff. Uh-huh. I used to, when I was a kid, when I would go to my mom's for the summer, I would steal her camera, which had at that point, because back in the day when my dad had his camcorder and it took like a whole VHS and all that stuff, big thing, I would still set it up and it would be me and my sister and my brother and our neighborhood friend acting out the opening cutscenes of video games that we liked or things like that. And then as I got older, I would take my mom's camera and I would do tons of in camera editing. So I got creative with it there. I did a whole bunch of stop motion animations and things like that. And I would, because I was doing all of my editing in camera, if I wanted music for a scene, I would literally get my headphones and hold up my headphones to the microphone on the camera so I could get that specific part of a song for a moment. And so, yeah, there's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. Video production was my favorite thing.
Yeah, well, I think kids now, because of YouTube and stuff like that, there's a lot more general knowledge of production, video production, than like when I was growing up. When I was growing up, it was just the people who did that, the movie people. They were the only ones who knew this stuff. Now, because so many people make video content, you know, there's a lot of people who know, you know, how to edit stuff like that now. You know, so
it's easier than ever.
So as somebody whose career it was to ever done high-end movies where you spend hours and hours and hours lighting a single shot, you know, which you don't get, YouTubers don't do that. You know, and so
it's a ring light or something.
The image quality in general, the image quality has gone down in the last 20 years. You know, and of course I was a snob, so I was like, why is everyone so excited about this? You know, video on the internet, it looks like crap. Which, you know, it really does. I mean, to be fair.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is that it opened up a whole new world for people to express themselves, people who otherwise wouldn't have had a chance to. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Well, I think in the final analysis, I'd have to say it's been a good thing as far as content goes, not that great for the visual aesthetic.
Sure, sure. But I mean, and it's easier now than ever to learn those skills because everything's digital now. So it's just like, I need to splice this scene and this scene together and move the audio so that it's here. And it's like,
right,
you know, it takes all of 30 seconds if you're being really picky about it.
Right.
And
well, you know, who's to thank for digital editing, right?
Who?
George Lucas. George Lucas was the one, everyone thinks of him doing Star Wars. His contributions to the industry and the technical area are amazing. Mm-hmm. Like,
I believe it.
Basically, like Avid, which was the first computer editing system, he created that.
I've used Avid. I used that when I did my internship at the city council because I worked for the public television, and I used Avid, and that was a lot of fun.
That used to be all there was. Did you know that? That was the only software there was for editing, was Avid.
Wow.
Now, see, I've done a great job of digressing right away. Let's talk about Taylor
Cole. Sorry, right. You digressed into something I love.
I know. And it is on topic because this is an animated show, so
true.
We didn't get completely off topic. So, Badger Pelt.
Badger Pelt, yes.
This is when we learned, this is when I wrote down his name, Tijin.
Yes,
and then
Shinokawa.
We learned from the interview that he does landscape photography. That's his specialty, landscape photography. And,
and he's very, like, very shy and nervous.
Yeah.
And very apologetic.
He doesn't really know how to handle being interviewed. He gives one-word answers. They're like, how does it feel to have won the Japan photo contest? And he's like, great. It wasn't like watching the Beatles get interviewed. He wasn't very charming.
Yeah.
So he's getting interviewed, and who rounds the corner? But a group of girls who've been hunting him down, that's who.
And the leader of the pack?
We hear Usagi saying, yep, there he is. And they run towards Kijin, and then all of a sudden, all of a sudden out of nowhere, Ray holds out her arm like it's a railroad crossing. And she's like, that's far enough. Stop being a fangirl. And so I was always interested about the term fanboy and fangirl. So I went ahead and looked it up. And it was interesting. It wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be. So it turns out that fangirl comes from a 1943 book called Holy Deadlock. And it's used to describe women who are obsessed with musicians. And it became that the term fangirl gained popularity in the early 60s in the era of the Beatles. Now, fanboy is different. Fanboy comes from a 1973 magazine called Fanboy by the cartoonist Jay Lynch and Glenn Bray. Lynch was inspired by Fun Boy from an earlier humor magazine that he had worked on, and he mashed up with fan to describe obsessive comic book devotees. So it's kind of the same thing. Fangirl comes from 1943 to describe girls who are obsessed with musicians, which I didn't realize in 1943 that was a thing. I thought groupies kind of came with rock and roll. But apparently,
I feel like groupies have always existed in a way, but we just didn't have the name for them.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen, isn't there a movie called Fanboys with Kristen Bell?
I think so. And it's about
Star Wars nerds.
Guys, yeah, Star Wars nerds. And one of them's like terminally ill and needs to go see the new Star Wars movie.
Yeah, they want to break into the Skywalker Ranch.
Yeah.
That's Fanboy. All right. So anyway, Ray said she was talking, stop being such a fangirl. And probably with no knowledge that she was describing her 1943 book. Because fangirl now, I think, fangirl now is used to describe girls who are into comic books, isn't it?
A fangirl can be used to describe any sort of female presenting person who is excited about something. Like, for instance, it's so widely used now that it's used as a verb. Like, fangirling is a big thing where it's just like, when you're sitting there gushing about something you absolutely love. So, like, I fangirl over Sailor Moon all the fucking time.
Do you know anybody like that? Do you know anyone who gets really excited talking about something they love? So excited they can't talk sometimes?
This entire podcast is just about fangirling.
And so the Ray starts berating Usagi about being a fangirl, saying, you have no appreciation for his art. You're only interested in him because he's famous. And Usagi says,
please, I don't want you to. Mm-hmm. Yes.
The coastline, and he's in a very dangerous position off the road, and kind of crouched down. He's scanning the horizon, and he remarks to himself, the lighting dust changes so fast. And I just wrote down in my notes, photography 101, dude. Anyway, I would think as a landscape photographer, you wouldn't notice that before. Nevertheless,
he's in middle school.
True. So he raises a huge teleporter lens to his eye.
Yeah.
And says, there, that's the shot.
Shutter
chance. And he snaps a couple of photos of the setting sun. Which, by the way, totally looks like a mushroom cloud. Did you notice that?
I did not. But now I'm going to go back and look.
Okay, now we have to talk a little bit about photography here for a second. Because he's supposed to be a photographer. Do not use a huge teleporter lens for landscape photography. The teleporter lens is used for photographing something very small at a great distance. So it makes you look larger than life. Teleporter lenses are used by people who do wildlife photography because they're trying to get close to animals. And they're also used, like, the best photographers, the best camera operators in the world are, believe it or not, are guys who shoot golf. Because in golf, you have this little tiny white ball, and when you're shooting it for TV, you have to follow it in the air and follow it with the camera and keep it in the shot. Very, very hard to do. And those guys use teleporter lenses. You do not use a teleporter lens for a landscape shot. You don't take a close-up of the sun.
Well, you know what? Heejin does, okay?
Yeah.
And he won the prestigious Japan photo contest, okay?
I can say, I don't know if you're signing his trophy for him. Yeah. Anyway, I just thought it was funny. The reason, of course, that they do that, put that big lens on the camera, is to visual storytelling. He's a camera guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just makes sense.
And of course, as he's taking this shutter chance beautiful photo of the sunset in this precarious cliff face that he's standing on, he slips and falls straight into Nephrite's waiting arms.
Right. Yeah. it was of course a given that he was going to slip out of that position. And Nephrite is holding on with one hand and reaches down with his other hand to grab him and catch him as he falls. In doing so, Tijin drops his camera. And so Nephrite pulls him up and then reaches down for the camera. And when he reaches down for the camera, that's when he enchants it.
My exact notes are, that's a fancy camera you have. It would suck if someone cursed it.
Exactly. I noticed this in this episode. When Nephrite enchants an item, right? When he puts his crest on an item, the image we were walking turned black and white. And when that during the enchantment. And I was like, is that because it's a photography episode? Or did that happen before? So I went back and I looked at all the other episodes of Nephrite. And it turns out they're different. And I'll tell you how. The anime goes to black and white, and Nephrite crest glows, kind of a red-orange, on the large optical glass at the end of the teleporter lens. And he doesn't say anything. He just reaches out and kind of like with the force or whatever, he puts his crest on the camera, and it glows red-orange on the lens. Now, in previous episodes, in episode 14, Nephrite's crest, the image goes to black and white, the crest glows red-orange, same as in this episode, at the bottom of the tennis racket handle, and then he uses the spell, because an enchantment, it comes with this, in this case, comes with a verbal spell, and he says, cure me, my monster, and then, and then in episode 15, Usagi's panic, the image flashes multicolor, then turns to black and white, and the crest glows a blue-green on the face of the hat. And he says, once again, he says, cheer me, my monster, when he puts the crest on. In episode 16, A Girl's Dream, the image does not change color. And the crest flashes red on the patch of silk fabric. So it's different. The crest is a different color when Ray goes on a date, when the gardener, when he chants done that, it's a different color. It's a kind of a blue-green. And then in A Girl's Dream, it doesn't go to black and white when he chants the fabric. The image does not change color. And he also doesn't say, hear me, my monster. He's just standing there in the, with the melee of the girls at the fabric store. He just quickly enchants it. That was the most stealth version of enchanting. So, I'm interested in this because I'm still confused about what Nephrite's doing exactly. Is he using the star? Is he using the star to determine energy? And this is why. Because in this episode, we see Tijin shooting a sunset, and all of a sudden, Nephrite's there to save the day. Why would Nephrite be there? Why would Nephrite be there? And then because in the following scene, we see him consulting the stars. Wait, I'm like, wait a minute.
Here's my theory. Are you ready for my theory?
Okay, all right.
My theory is that it is like a flashback scene.
Okay. All right.
So rather than having it at the beginning and like being like, oh, here's what he's doing. Now we have a person. It's like a flashback of him doing it, figuring out who it is, and then being like, yes. That's my theory. Right.
That's your theory. I already thought about that. So I went back and I looked. It turns out this is not the first time he's done this. In A Girl's Dream, when Aruna is talking to Professor Based about when they run into each other at the dressmaker's shop. Yeah. In that scene, they're talking outside of the dressmaker shop, and he's saying that you're late to dress, you know, I hope your wedding's great because I'm looking for a husband there. And then we see Neprite in his sports car listening in on the conversation. And then after that, it cuts to Kim in the mansion consulting the stars. So it's out of order because why would he be listening in on their conversation?
True.
You know what I mean? But before the stars have told him. So then in this episode, he saved the kid's life. And he says, keep taking those pictures. I'm a big fan of your work. So he had the magazine too. When we go to the mansion, which is the very next scene, he has the magazine with him and he throws it on the floor. And he says that Sirius, the demon star, shines its light. And normally when he's getting information from the stars, a beam of light comes from this blinking star. A beam of light comes and hits him in the forehead. And that's when he finds out whose energy is going to be. The beam of light does not hit him in the forehead. Beam of light hits the magazine laying on the floor. And he says it points to Keegan, whatever his last name is. So Neprite already had the magazine with the kid in it. And he's already saved the kid's life. He says he's a big fan of his work. And then the star tells him that kid just so happens to be the one whose energy is going to be the highest. This is called continuity, Maddie. There's a continuity error in here. I don't think it's a flashback. I think it's a continuity error.
I don't know.
It's just more dramatic. It's more dramatic to see Keegan almost lose his life and Neprite sweeps in and saves him. Because then it makes Neprite look like he's a good guy. He's not. He's part of the Dark Kingdom.
Oh, yeah, he's
always
going to be there.
He turned that camera into a monster camera. Yeah. Not a good guy. Also, by the way.
No.
By the way.
It's true. I'm convinced that he's just avoiding her. Because he keeps fucking up, you know? He doesn't want to face her. She's got eternal sleep powers.
Would you? I don't want eternal slumber.
I mean, it might be nice to just like take a forever nap. But not like in the sense of like being dead, but just to rest. For however long until somebody wakes me up.
So it's also just weird because the star is tapping him in the forehead where the star is pointing to magazine articles. And the stars can do what they want.
Yeah,
that's true. All right.
I like shortly after the picking of the victim scene in Neprite's chateau, I like that it cuts to Keegan and he's like, I feel the urge to take photos of lots of girls.
Yeah.
Which I'm like,
he's like, art is an explosion. So what's happened is you have Mild-Mannered Shoeshine Boy, which is, of course, an underdog reference. Mild-Mannered Shoeshine Boy all of a sudden becomes this crazy photographer who wants to photograph girls, which makes more sense because, people do that, photographers who specialize in high-end fashion, cover girls and the shooting supermodels. Those guys are all weird, and they're above manic energy, just like Keegan has suddenly become. And art is an explosion. He keeps saying that. He keeps saying art is an explosion. And I like that he's sitting there cleaning his cameras, and he's getting more and more worked up about photographing girls. And he knows that's his goal. Yeah. You know, the more the merrier, basically, is what he says. And so then we cut to Luna's giving Usagi their new communicators. Mm-hmm. And Usagi's first thought with the communicators is, oh, good. I can tell Ami, Luna, we're going to go try and get this guy's autograph.
Yeah.
There's an ad in the publication that says that they're looking for models. And that's what it is. Yes. They're looking for models. And Usagi's excited to tell Ami that. And Ami's in my blanket. Usagi, the communicators are only supposed to be used for official business.
And, oh, by the way, I can't talk anymore. I'm doing math.
Yeah. Ami's definitely not that interested in this particular obsession of the Chinese.
No.
Which I feel like by this point, Usagi shouldn't be surprised that Nami doesn't share her passions for some of this stuff. You know what I mean?
I think she as much as she's not surprised, she's also not, she's always going to fangirl.
Right, right.
Yeah. And I love that right after that, when Ami's like, I have to go do math, go away. She's like, I could call Ray. Wait, Ray is going to yell at me again.
That's what it is, exactly. That if I thought better giving Ray a call, I like that.
Yeah.
So poor Usagi can't find anybody who can be excited for her because next we see her talking to her brother.
Yes.
By the way, what's his age? How old is your brother?
Shingo is... That's a good question. Let me look it up real quick.
He's a younger brother, though, right? He's a younger brother, right? Mm-hmm. But he can't be by much, since we find out in the next episode he has a girlfriend.
True.
So I looked at
here. Shingo is 10 to 12.
Okay. Yeah. Pretty young to be having a girlfriend, by the way.
I mean, I'm not going to judge.
How old were you when you had your first boyfriend?
I was in fourth or fifth grade? Fifth grade, I think. How old are you in fifth grade? Oh, there you go. Well, I was always a year younger than everybody because my birthday's in the summer, so.
And that's when he says it takes more than just good looks. You got to have brains.
Yeah.
And he basically calls her, he uses a term. Brainless bunny. He calls her a brainless bunny. Oh, I got browser prevention recording. I have to refresh.
Right? I mean, you know.
All right.
Okay. Shingo is the...
Can you hear me?
Hello. I can.
Hello. I'm...
Hello. Welcome back.
All right. Very good. Thank you. It's sending me back.
Yeah.
So no luck with her brother in getting any support on her becoming a model. So she goes, you know, now she's looking for the comfort of strangers. She's at the game center talking to Motoki.
She has a moment with her mom before that where Shingo is saying, you're way too dumb to be a model. Models need to know things too. And then he's like, Miss Dummy fails, you know. And then she's like, Mom, Shingo's being mean to me. And her mom is, oh, I thought Shingo was right. Like, no sympathy from Mom. No sympathy.
None. So now she goes to Motoki.
Mm-hmm.
It was our crush boy. And he's being very supportive. He's not saying that you're model material, but he is saying, try your hardest. That was nice.
Always gotta try. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, and see, then, in my world, she does have what it takes to be a model. You know what I mean? She's very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
So then all of a sudden, so Motoki's telling her to try her hardest, and then mm-hmm. we see Mamoru's there. And Mamoru's try your hardest. But it probably won't work out.
He says, he explains what it's like to what makes a good model and all of that stuff. But being a model is dumb as well because they think simply looking good makes a girl beautiful. A girl's beauty is not just her look. It's what's on her inside. A kind heart doing what she thinks is right.
Right. And the important thing here is that doing what she thinks is right mm-hmm. to him. That's a very important element. A girl who stands up for what is right.
That's, girls have guts.
Yeah. Now, I think he's off, a little bit off. I don't think a lot of models have strong convictions. You know, when there's beauty pageants, and you see them up there getting interviewed, you know that they volunteered for a charity simply because it looks good for the pageant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's interesting at the end of that scene, when she walks away, and we have a moment at the end of the scene where... It lingers on Mamoru's face, and he says, I guess we weren't meant for each other. And there's like this curious background tone while we're lingering on his face. What do you think that means?
There's a what?
It's like a curious little background note, like a, it's mysterious.
Oh, yeah, where he muses to himself, where he says, I guess we weren't meant for each other. So here's my deal with that is when was it suggested that they were meant for each other? They've always been argumentative.
I don't know. Maybe he's trying to be friendlier because she's friends with Mocha.
Keeps telling him to. Mocha keeps telling it. Yeah. He's like, you really shouldn't be so hard on her. She's a really good person.
Yeah. He's like, I guess we weren't meant for each other.
Yeah.
Curious.
Yeah, I wrote the same thing down. What can I say? Yeah. I guess the exact quote is, what can I say? I guess she and I just weren't meant for each other.
Guess
not. I don't know, but why do they linger on that particular sentiment? I don't know. How would I know?
That's a good question.
It's not like you're teaching me movies that tell me things about what happens in the future.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't even know why he would say that or why they linger on that. That's so curious.
Hmm. Right. And so in my notes, I have a little asterisk. And I wrote, people who have questions often quarrel with each other before realizing that they're hot for each other. So maybe that's it. Maybe it's like he realizes that they're one of those couples who starts out.
Perhaps. We'll see.
Well, because that does happen. If somebody's really getting under your skin, that person probably has some significance for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's plenty of annoying people out there who simply are just silly to me. They don't really get to me. The people who get to me are the ones I end up caring about.
Wait, like, are you trying to say that I was annoying when you first met?
You kept correcting my grammar.
Yeah, that was the thing I used to do. I'm not so harsh on spelling anymore and grammar. I'm like, if it's understood what you mean, it's good.
I just thought it was funny because I know I'm a terrible speller. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. Listen, this is true. In the 70s, they had this thing. It was called ITA. And what it was phonetics. And so when I went to school, we didn't get taught how to read normally. We had a special section in the library called the ITA. And it was for the kids who were in kindergarten, first and second grade. And it was all the books were written in phonetics. And so we didn't start reading regular words until third grade. And nobody could spell because we'd been reading the words wrong. And that's actually why they pulled the program and said the children had a detrimental effect on children's ability to spell. But I was in an experimental group. I had particular children born children born between 68 and 71 were subjected to this great idea called ITA, which in fact, it just made a generation of bad spellers. So it's not my fault.
Happens to the best of us. Happens to the best of us.
It's not my fault, Maddie. That's what I'm saying.
All right. I won't hold it against you.
That's it. All right, so guess what? Sailor Moon sent me away to the mail, and guess what? Guess what? She gets accepted to the first round. Yep.
And Shingo is genuinely surprised.
Yes, he is. And you know what that means, Maddie? It means that it's time for a montage. You see Team America World Police, right? You're going to have a montage.
It's been a hot minute since I've seen it.
Well, there's literally a song called Gonna Have a Montage. And so for listeners who don't know what a montage is, it's a series of quick cuts that shows time passing. Like in the movie Rocky, when he's training to be a fighter, when he's training for the fight, and you see him drinking raw eggs, jogging up and down stairs in the Philadelphia Capitol building, cut to beating on pieces of meat. It's all quick cuts of things showing the viewer that a person is preparing for something, usually. They're getting ready for something. Or another montage would be like when the outcasts form their own fraternity and they get a fraternity house, and you show a montage of them cleaning up the fraternity house and painting it and getting it ready for them. Mm-hmm. That's a montage. Yep. In this case, the montage is Usagi getting ready for her model shoot.
Yes, and she is walking around with books on her head, practicing her diction, and all of that stuff. And Luna, as ever, is very skeptical. Yes, it's been destroyed by moths and bugs, and she's devastated. But, you know, I've had clothes destroyed by rodents before. And it's super just sad because you go and you're like, I'm going to wear this thing. Yeah, true. True, true, true. I've just had clothes destroyed by rodents because, you know, they're like, ooh, soft bedding. I can raise my litter here or what have you. Yeah. And that was a lot of that happened when my stuff was in storage for years. So going through my boxes, I'm like, no, why? So, you know, I can. Yes. Okay. Sounds good. I don't know.
All right. Can you hear me now?
I can. Yes.
All right. Okay. So now we cut to Art is an Explosion. we're at a pool. The photo shoot is at a pool, a public pool or something mm-hmm. like that. And Keegan is instructing the various models that he wants them to stay in their dressing rooms until he's ready for them because he doesn't want to be interrupted. He doesn't want them interrupting his creative process, which turns out is not
the
true.
Close shoot.
Right. Why is it a closed shoot, Maddie? Why is the real reason?
Because his camera is actually just absorbing people.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
His camera is absorbing energy. He's making the models, a beam of light comes out of his camera and makes them disappear.
Yep. Which, I mean, I feel like that's a step up from all the other ones that we've seen because every other energy gathering scheme has not caused mass disappearances.
Right, I know.
This is
a force to be reckoned with, and it's a harder fight too coming up.
Yeah, yeah, and Usagi is, or not Usagi, Luna is very sus about the whole thing.
Once again,
she's like,
Luna's always sus. She picks up on the. She's got good monster radar.
Yeah, she's got great intuition. She's just like, whoa, something hinky here.
Right, so then Keegan gives Art is an Explosion once again. When I sense the moment is right, I get up close and boom! I'm a photographic genius. But what he's not a photographic genius. What actually is happening is a beam of light shoots out of the camera, models get bathed in prismatic colors, turning into whited out silhouettes and then disappear.
Mm-hmm.
So Luna goes to tell her, Luna can sneak in because she's a cat. So she doesn't have to worry about being seen. And she sees the girls disappearing and she runs to tell Usagi, who, by the way, is having none of it. She doesn't want to hear anything about any monsters or anything like that. This is her big chance to be a model. She doesn't want Luna to get a buzzkill. So what does Luna do?
Luna, well, first of all, I want to point out that Usagi's fix on her bathing suit is super cute. She just tied a bunch of bows through all of the mop holes, and it looks adorable.
It does.
So
Luna steals one of the bows, leaving a hole in her bathing suit, and Usagi gets mad at her and chases after her. Luna's got the bow in her mouth and runs to the pool, which draws Usagi out. Usagi's breaking the rule of disturbing the shoot. And then Usagi sees that the camera is making girls disappear. And she realizes that it's for real.
Yes. And she specifically sees the group that has both Haruda. Sakurada.
And Naru.
Haruna. And Naru. And they get all absorbed into the camera. And she's like, shit. And she immediately confronts him before transforming. She's like, wait, we got to talk about this. And first thing out of her mouth is basically word for word what Mamoru said to her.
Yeah, that's right. Mamoru says that anybody who will just shoot anyone is a second-rate photographer at best, maybe a third-rate photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And then Usagi said the same thing, which Luna does not fail to mention. Luna said right away, you're just kidding.
Yeah, she's like, excuse me? You just basically said what he said. How dare you?
Yeah.
And in response to that, she gets shoved by Kijin, who doesn't want any of that.
So then we get the transformation. Moon does the power makeup. Usagi transforms. And she does a new attack. Did you notice that? Sailor Moon first Kick.
She does Sailor Moon Kick, but she also doesn't say Tsukine Koate o Shokyo at the end of her transformation speech. She instead specifically calls out I think she said something about the photography situation, but she says something different at the end of her speech, where she's Sailor Moon, and then she says something different at the end.
Which is what in English? I'm the pretty guardian who fights.
I'm the pretty guardian who fights for love and justice, Sailor Moon. Pretty suited sailor soldier who fights for love and justice, Sailor Moon. And Tsukine Koate o Shokyo is in the name of the moon, I'll punish you.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So then she busts out a new attack, Sailor Moon Kick.
Yes. Her most famous.
And then the Yoma tells us her name. The Yoma says, yes. My name is Chimera.
Kyamaran. It's basically it's camera with an A, so Cameron. Yep.
Exactly. So we didn't have to do any research on where that Yoma's name came from.
No.
Kind of
pretty obvious.
And then so Sailor Moon is like, careful, Tegan. If you keep using that camera, it's going to steal your energy. And then it does. She realizes that he's been, the camera had taken over.
Yep.
And Lura wants Sailor Moon. Cameron takes this your picture. He'll be stuck inside a photograph forever.
Yep.
And
Cameron
so Sailor Moon dodges a couple of attempts where the camera almost took a picture of her. And then Lura realizes that she's in trouble. And Lura rushes out and dives in front of one of the shots. And takes a bullet for Sailor Moon.
It takes a Polaroid for Sailor Moon, really.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
and Sailor Moon is devastated. She's like, no. Oh God. We should mention that previously, before the bow was taken, she did call Ami-chan on her new communicator that she got at the beginning of the episode.
Yep.
The other girls are alerted and supposedly are on their way.
Right. Which makes sense, because then all of a sudden Sailor Mercury and Sailor Mars appear.
Mm-hmm.
And Mercury yells out, "Hold it right there," and gives her a bubble spray. And then Mars starts casting her spells, which turns out Cameron blocks them. So bubble spray normally, see, maybe wonder if maybe Mars should use fire salt instead of, what I mean?
I feel like it wouldn't have worked anyway, because as we see next is Kiamaran basically has taken photos of their powers, like the mist and all of that stuff, and turns both of them into photos.
Right.
As well, without actually taking pictures of them, she took pictures of their attacks.
Right.
And they were absorbed.
I didn't notice that. Thank you. I did not notice that. Good point. So then, Sailor Moon's having a tough time dodging these attacks. Yeah. And Sailor Moon's going to be next, she realizes. Because now that the Yoma has gotten Luna trapped in a photograph. And now Mars and Mercury are trapped in a photograph, and it's not looking good for Sailor Moon. And then she realizes to herself, hey, wait, what if the Yoma takes a picture of herself? Which is a good thought, that.
I have written here, like, I have.
I don't like Medusa.
Yeah. I wrote down, it's moments like these that we remember. Usagi is definitely a ditz, but she's not dumb. Like, they always talk about how she's failing stuff, but it's just, like, because she didn't really apply herself. But she thinks about the reflection bit all by herself. She, based on something that Luna said, she was just like, oh, wait, maybe I can try this, and ends up saving the day. It's very similar to a couple episodes back when she had the microphone, and she was like, wait a minute. If they sing into the microphone, it's going to hurt them because amplification and all that stuff. So it's just like, Usagi is actually, she is smart in her own way. And I love it. I love that in this episode, she's not saved by anyone. Yeah.
Yeah. That's just pretty important, though, the reflection thing. Those people didn't call it cheating. Look at that. And it works. Exactly. She realizes she's standing in front of something reflective. She jumps out of the way as the yoma takes the picture. And the yoma's like, no, I've been trapped by my own camera. And I was like, now, wait a minute. Normally, if someone has, okay, let's say you're a black mage. That gives you immunity to fire, usually, because it's your base of attack. Normally, if you're a rocks dragon, you have immunity to cold attacks. You would think that a yoma who comes from a camera would have the ability to not photograph herself. You know what I mean? But apparently not.
I mean, I don't think they were thinking that far ahead. This was before selfies, back when they were still only party pics.
Good point. Good point. So, the idea works.
You held the camera out and you took your picture and you were just like, I'm going to take this picture with my friends. Hope it turns out okay. I'll find out when it's developed.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know that the yoma gets trapped in the camera, but it does freeze her enough that the MTA is effective. It freezes the yoma in place and Sailor Moon hits her with an MTA. And the MTA destroys the yoma, and then in doing so, it releases the others from their clutches.
Yep.
And that's basically the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And that's pretty quick.
Yeah, the end of the fight and all that stuff. But then right before it all ends, right after she destroys Kyamaran, we cut to the chateau. Yeah. We cut to the chateau, and Nephroid's like, shit, she died. I lost all that energy. This is frustrating. Yep. I guess I'll have to figure something out. And, who do we hear?
Mr. Chee-hee-hee.
It's our good friend, Soysight.
Remember earlier when I was like, why isn't Nephroid worried about the silver crystal? Well, it turns out, because Nephroid asks, so, Soysight, have you found the silver crystal? So I guess that they split up duties. And Soysight is supposed to find the silver crystal. But
he
couldn't help himself but to take the opportunity to gloat about Nephroid's
failure. Oh, yeah. And he's like, what's going to happen when Beryl finds out? So I feel like that kind of supports our Nephroid's been kind of avoiding Beryl, which is kind Nephroid, of causing failures.
Nephroid has been avoiding Beryl.
Oh, yeah.
And then we cut to Keegan. Is being interviewed, saying that he's stepping down, he's taking a break from photography because he learned that a girl's true beauty isn't just her looks, that it's what's in her heart and it's her ability to do the right thing. And until he truly appreciates that, he won't take any more pictures. That's what he says.
Yeah.
And then he said that he learned this from a young girl. And then we cut to Usagi's family is watching this interview on TV, and Usagi's mom says, I wish Usagi would be a young girl like that who could inspire somebody. Oh, the irony.
Oh, yeah. I went on this whole rant.
That's the end of the episode.
Yeah. So in my notes, I went on this whole rant at the end of that, where it starts with, no one thinks that Usagi is smart enough to share wisdom, but let me read it verbatim. It's like, Usagi has an extremely high EQ, emotional intelligence, and cares so deeply for her friends and family. She treats total strangers with kindness, curiosity, and empathy. She's amazing, and I aspire to be as kind and loving as she is. But what I love most about Usagi, and what I also love about her, is that she is incredibly flawed as well. She is to be admired in her imperfection.
Right.
Because, you know, she's just like, people don't give her enough credit. She's pretty amazing.
Well, people definitely.
It always irks me when people.
She's definitely underappreciated. She's definitely underappreciated by everyone. But Motoki thinks she's great. You know what I mean? He's not critical of her if she's dumb or that she doesn't care about. You know, so Motoki sees it. And I think it's funny because Usagi is Sailor Moon. When Usagi becomes Sailor Moon, she doesn't gain attributes. These are who Usagi is. It's who she is. And people don't see it. It's funny. People don't see it. And I think that's part, that's part of the charm of the show. So I think the show is, this is what the show is saying to young people, especially young girls, is that you can have these traits and attributes and people don't see it. And that these are the things that make Sailor Moon great, but these are attributes that you can have too. You can be a superhero.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? There was this thing that they had in the Deke dub, which is the original dub for Sailor Moon, where what they would do is at the end they had Sailor Moon Says, where the the producers and editors would just like chop off a bunch of clips and then have Sailor Moon talk about different things, like on the episode about weight loss, where with Jadeite, where they're at the gym, they have a whole segment at the end where they're just like, you don't need to focus on that. Women are beautiful no matter what size they are, and please don't working out and being healthy is one thing, but don't work yourself to the point where you're exhausted and hurting yourself. And it was just like, even though that wasn't originally part of the show, it's really nice that they added that in, because it's like a very it's important. It's important for young girls to hear that, and it's emphasized so much in the show, but then also having that extra thing at the end being like, hey, by the way, in case we didn't beat you over the head with it enough, you're perfect the way you are.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't know. I guess I love this show about feeling good for yourself.
Yeah. You want to talk about social media?
Yeah. So as always, you guys can reach us on pretty much all social media with MooneyCast. We're at MooneyCast on Twitter. Our Facebook is facebook.com/AcrossTheMooniverse. And then, of course, we have our main webpage, which is acrossthemooniverse.castos.com. And we try and update those and keep in tune as much as possible. But, you know, we're busy people. But we still love you all. I've been sharing a lot of things on our Facebook page recently, trying to keep up the action. And I shared on June 30th, which was Usagi's birthday. Gotta show representation for our girl.
Happy Moon Day, everybody. We'll see you for the next episode, episode 18. What's it called, Maddie?
Shingo's Love, the Grieving Doll.
That's right, the Grieving Doll, yep. Like I said, I looked at it a little bit, y'all. So Shingo has a girlfriend.
Ooh.
All right, everyone, thank you. Have a good night.